And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this Friday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Today is October 30th, 2015, the eve of Halloween. Our guest tonight is Mr. John Little. His website is OmegaShock.com. That's OmegaShock.com. We're going to get back to him in just a second.
He's such a good friend of the program, and he's such a great writer. I was telling him during the break that...
And a great guest.
Yeah, yeah. And I really like the way John... writes. I really do. And folks, you know, it's difficult. People think, for example, you can sit down behind a microphone and do a show for 3 hours and it should be a piece of cake. It's not like digging a ditch or something. And it's not physically laborious. But
I mean, it can be, but it depends on how much work you put into it that day.
Exactly. And the same thing goes with articles. I mean, great writers are really few and far between if you've ever read some. So John's a great writer. But anyway, before we get back to John, folks, I do want to mention as well that, you know, we had talked about portions of the nice broadcast being brought to you by Casper Mattress. I'm going to just mention, last night I got home late, did some work at the studio, and crawled into a Casper mattress. And I got to tell you, a Casper mattress is my favorite by far mattress ever. And folks, one thing that you can do for yourself, and I really mean this, is if you have back problems, or if you are just, you know what, if your mattress is almost outdated, or you know you're not having a great good night's sleep, do yourself a favor, get yourself a new mattress for your general health, for a good night's sleep. Casper offers, well, what they have is an obsessively engineered mattress at a very shockingly fair price. The mattresses have just the right sink, just the right bounce. In fact, when I'm laying on the bed and lady comes jumping up, I mean, she can jump a good ways, and you know, I don't even know she jumped up on the bed. I mean, that's the right bounce, that's the right sink, that's the right technology. The two technologies, latex foam and memory foam, they come together for really a better night's sleep and much brighter days. Offer a risk-free trial and return policy. Just try sleeping on Casper mattress for 100 days with their free delivery, painless returns. And I have to say that the mattresses are made in America. You know, there's so many things that aren't anymore, but mattresses, Casper mattresses are. $500 for a twin-size mattress, $950 for a king-size mattress. Very, 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 very well-priced. You can't beat the price, as a matter of fact. But here's what you got to do, folks. In order to get the specials, you have to go to CasperMattress.com/CFP Radio. That's CasperMattress.com/CFP Radio. And enter the code CFP Radio, coupon code, for, get this, an extra $50 off.
Yeah, so when you go, and unlike some of the other ones, just the URL, CFP Radio, Casper at CFPRadio.com, once you get there, you have to use CFP Radio as the promo code.
Right, for the $50 off. Man, I'll tell you, and that's a great buy. It's a great buy at full price, but Hagman and Hagman listeners, you get it at $50 off.
I got to say that they're worth it. I mean, you use every excuse to get in there and take a nap during the day you can.
Yeah, I'm going back home. And
it's been a long 15 minutes in my computer.
Yeah. No, but folks, seriously, we don't promote anything we don't believe in or use ourselves. CasperMattress.com/CFP Radio. CFP Radio for the coupon code for the $50 off, and it's you'll thank us later. John Little is our guest, OmegaShock.com. That's his home base. He's all across he's on the other side of the world right now, where it's Saturday, not Friday for the majority of our listeners. And, you know, my old standby joke, just, John, tell us what the lottery numbers will be, you know, and we could really make a killing on it, since you're so 12 hours ahead. I won't do that one anymore. But anyway, John, it's great to have you as our guest, and we left off before the break of talking about
the Book of Lamentations.
Yeah, Book of Lamentations. Let's go ahead and continue with that.
Yeah, well, first of all, and thank you for calling me a great writer. The day I believe that is the day that I will stop being a great writer. For those that are aspiring to be good writers, the most important thing is the willingness to just lay yourself out across the page and practice. You know, practice, practice, practice. The willingness to lay yourself out on the page, just to be as brutally honest about who you are. And then, frankly, to write how you talk. Don't try to be artificial. Just really try to be who you are. That's really the key. But back to Lamentations. Look, we live at the same moment in time as Jeremiah did. Jeremiah was watching the destruction of his own civilization, his own people, just as we are. And in fact, Israel at that moment in time, or I should say Judah, were doing very much the same kinds of things that we're doing today. We are murdering our children. We are turning ourselves towards God, away from God, towards other idols. And in fact, actually, a class that that my wife and I were teaching last night, they were teaching on Solomon. And what he did, he didn't stop worshiping God. What he did is he just added the worship of other gods to his worship of God. And I'm sorry, you can't do both. You can't worship other gods and worship our God. Our God wants exclusivity. And there's something in our minds that think, it's okay, we can worship God and worship all these other things that our society is asking us to do. Now, we don't think of ourselves as turning towards other gods when we turn on the television or we watch our movies or all the other things that we do. And I'm not saying that everything that's on television is idolatrous. But it is. There is idolatry there. And if we sat down and really devoted our attention towards God, we would see it. If you can't see the idolatry on your television, if you can't see the evil that comes into your living room every day, then you aren't devoting yourself to God sufficiently to see it. It takes a real devotion to God to see the evil that is around you. I mean, I know myself. I didn't see the evil. I was pretty much oblivious, but for me to see it, it really took God pulling me out of America in 1992 and then dragging me back, kicking and screaming, in 2006. And the difference was shocking. It was really something. So the thing is this, if you want to see the evil, as Jeremiah saw the evil in his society, you need to be opening your Bible and reading it and pouring it into your life. And if reading, and I have friends that reading is really difficult, there are people with dyslexia in which reading is just painful and difficult, and I understand that. Well, I don't exactly understand it because I don't have that problem. So listen to the Bible. Who is it? Alexander Scorby? Is that his name? He reads the Bible. He has a Bible reading where he recorded his reading of the Bible, the King James Version, I think in the 40s or 50s.
Right.
He's dead now, but that recording is fantastic. And for a short time, I had a website that was called almucadas.com. And I was, it was sort of an audio Bible in Arabic. But anyway, the thing is like Jeremiah, you know, we live in that sort of same time as we watch our society really crumble around us. And Jeremiah is really lamenting over all the horrible things that are happening. And he himself, I mean, he went through a rough time. If you read the book of Jeremiah, and of course if you read it also in Chronicles and Kings, sort of what he went through, you'll see that he was thrown in jail, he almost died, he had to go through starvation. But the worst part of it wasn't the physical aspects of what he was suffering. It was him watching the suffering and the destruction that was coming upon his people. And in fact, the worst part of it wasn't what he directly... The worst part of it, actually, he saw everything. But a large part of the heartache was actually watching this coming. We're sitting in the same situation as poor Jeremiah. as we are watching the destruction of our civilization, of our country, of our people, of our neighborhoods, and the people that we love and care for, as we call them to righteousness, and as they say, no, we don't want any part of that, as we do all that, and as we're doing everything in our power, and even trying to do more than what is in our power, to call people to safety. I mean, really, when we call people to righteousness and to truth and to Jesus Christ and all of that, I mean, what we're calling people to is to safety. The ultimate prepping, you might say, is accepting Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior.
Amen.
So, the thing is this, is as we struggle with all these things and as we are living out the life of Jeremiah. And for those, and I don't know what it is I wrote that struck such a nerve, but I got some anti-Semites that were sending me some comments and some email. And, you know, let me make a point here. Israel fell, and God gave us the opportunity to serve Him. But Israel is rising again, and it's right at the time where we have fallen. So don't be proud against Israel and against the Jews, because we are following exactly the same path that they walked. We are doing exactly the same thing. We are sacrificing our children to Moloch. We are, even today, as we send our children out to do trick-or-treating, we are sacrificing them. We are sending them out to participate in a religious activity. Going out tonight, I'm sorry, tomorrow night for you guys, sending your children out to go trick-or-treating may seem like an innocent thing, but what you are doing is you are engaging in a spiritual religious activity. Make no mistake, it seems innocent. I mean, look, all the things, like when I watch the Taiwanese go into the temples and pray, and they have this, like, casting lots. You watch them do that in terms of how they can determine what the demons are trying to tell them. Because they're asking the demons, you know, they don't think of it as demons, but they're asking the demon to tell them what they want to hear, what they need to hear. And it seems like an innocent activity. And as some Taiwanese people come to me and they're sort of conflicted. I mean, they've accepted Jesus as their Lord and Savior. And they have their families that are expecting them to go to the temples and to light the incense and to cast the lots and to give the offerings to their ancestors. And they're torn. And they're asking me for permission. Is it okay for me to do this? To especially if you're the oldest son in the family, your responsibility is huge. And if you say no, it is a catastrophe. And another person came to me and talked about his challenge, where his parents that were still alive were worried that no one would pray for them, no one would pray to them in terms of their evil religion that they were following, although they didn't see it as evil. They were worried that no one was going to provide for them for eternity, because in a lot of these traditional religions here in Taiwan, you have to provide for the eternal well-being of your parents that have passed on. So we have a lot of people burning this sort of paper religious money, where you're one of the ways that you sort of pass the money off to your parents that are living in eternity is that you buy this sort of religious paper money and you burn it. And it's a way of actually providing for the well-being of your ancestors that have gone on into the next life. And they're worried that their children won't do that for them, especially their oldest son, that's the most important one. And they're worried. And so these new Christians that have accepted Christ are torn by this desire to follow the wishes of their family. But they can't do that. They can't be sitting in between. They can't have one foot in the old religion and one foot in Christianity. It's got to be one or the other. And it seems also innocent when, oh, well, it's no big deal when I'm lighting the incense or I'm bowing before the idol. It doesn't seem like such a big deal, but what's so big about going through that action of bowing the head and lighting the incense and providing the religious food? That it seems like no big deal. In fact, someone was making the joke about, you know, if you're eating a piece of chicken that seems tasteless, maybe it was offered to an idol or something. Because, I don't know, anyway, this is very strange. But the thing is, it seems like nothing, but it isn't nothing. It isn't nothing. In fact, what it is you especially, and this is what Satan wants the most. Satan wants you to participate. He wants you to give him permission. There's always, you remember that, I don't know if I'm not someone who spends a lot of time reading vampire novels or watching vampire shows or anything like that, but there's this interesting, I don't know where it comes from, but apparently for a vampire to enter your house, you have to welcome the vampire in. You have to open the door. You have to... The vampire can't cross the threshold of your door without you giving permission to that vampire. Mm. Now, the vampirism is, you know, it's a completely stupid story, except that there is this truth that I believe in this story, in the sense that in terms of a demonic presence, in some way, you have to be giving permission for that demonic presence to enter your life. Now, it can be many different ways. It can be, in fact, Russ Dizdar, when he actually was quoting the verse, and I have to, I'm very bad at chapter and verse, where it's from Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26 and 27. It says, "Be ye," where Paul is speaking, he says, "Be ye angry and sin not." So make sure that your anger is a righteous anger and not a self-righteous anger. "Let not the sun go down upon your wrath," meaning your insane, your horrible anger. And then the next verse says, "Neither give place to the devil." And that's verse 27. Now, he connects both verses, and I think he's correct. If you allow anger to consume your life, you're opening the door to satanic influence.
Yes, you are.
And I know many families that have been torn apart by anger. And basically, anger really means it's a lack of forgiveness. You're not forgiving. And I understand that. I mean, look, anger is a reflection of a threat to you, to your sense of survival. I mean, a lot of different things can happen that you can point to and say, oh, well, it's justified. And I understand that. You're being taken advantage of, and you have received something that's unjust. It wasn't right what was done to you. Everybody who would see that would probably understand, but you are paying the price by your anger, and that you're opening the door to Satan. You really are opening the door to Satan, and you're opening the door to just terrible suffering if you do not forgive. And the person that wrote the book, The Road Less Traveled, and I read this many years ago, and it really just spoke to me, and it was written by a guy that was at that moment in time was not a Christian. He later on became a Christian. But what he wrote was interesting, and especially since he wrote it as someone who didn't believe in God at that moment in time. And so it makes this statement even more powerful. He said, as a psychologist, I think he actually was a psychiatrist, He said, the most difficult thing that we can do is to convince those that have been abused, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm not giving an exact quote, those that have been terribly abused, to convince them to forgive their abusers. And that is a terrible thing. I mean, it's a terribly difficult thing to do, to forgive those that have abused you, those that don't, and those, especially those that don't think they did anything wrong, who knew you, who you loved, and tried to, and they tried to destroy you. I mean, the anger that comes out of that, the sense of injustice. If you don't forgive that yourself, that doesn't mean that you have to say that they were right. It wasn't right what happened to you. It was not right. And you can be forgiven for suffering over that. But you must forgive. And the problem is, and as much as we're talking about Halloween and how awful this day is, Satan will use your anger and your wrath, your suffering. He will turn that into a plague upon your life. And in fact, if you look carefully at a lot of the Satanism that's out there, at the heart of all of it is just a terrible, terrible wrath and anger. I mean, these people, these Satanists are really angry. And they That's want true. Payback.
Yeah.
So when you look at what's going on today, look at all the costumes that a lot of these people are putting their kids in. I mean, are these costumes angry, or are they, you know, nice and wonderful, frilly, good stuff? No, it's not. It's anger. Anger and rage is at the heart of all of this. And if you want to protect yourself and your family, start forgiveness now. And I know it's hard. I mean, you say, okay, I want to forgive. How can I do that? First of all, just ask God. Ask God to give you the ability to forgive the person that did wrong to you. Just you, if you from your heart ask God to do that for you. It won't happen necessarily immediately. For some people it will. Some of these things can work very quickly. Sometimes it takes a long time. I oftentimes tell people that it once took me 10 years, 10 long years to forgive. Some things are just that horrendous. And I understand. It's a hard, hard battle to go through that. But in the end, you will be free. You will be blessed. You will have peace in your life. Doesn't mean that your life will be great, but you will have peace in your life. You will be blessed by God. And you will have something that you can help others with. I mean, I've been able to help others with their terrible struggles and the horrible things that they've been through because I've had my own story to share. And I won't share all the details here with all of your listeners, but the point is that we must forgive if you want to be protected from Satan. And it's just this amazing challenge that we all must go through to humble ourselves before God, to forgive others of the things that they have done to us. And of course, we must forgive them because God forgave us. And I can tell you that I'm as big an idiot as anybody else that's listening to this. I really am. And
well, I think we all are. You know, yeah. I mean, boy, yeah, I knew I mean, we all are.
And I'm sure, John, you've experienced this, and as many have, you know, situations where you go through where the Lord actually puts you through a situation and then shows you how wrong you were, whether it was in anger or in lack of forgiveness. And what you're speaking on is really one of the hardest things that I had to do was to learn how to forgive, you know, be able to pray for people like the president, whether it was Bush or Obama, and pray for the, yep. You know, people that write lies about us or are creating, you know, problems for other people in our family or in our, you know, listening audience or whatever the case is. For forgiveness of people who adamantly and don't like you and work towards that, that goal of trying to tear you down, that's man. That's one of the most difficult things and you can ever do is to actually forgive with all your heart and mean it. It's not something that comes overnight. I can say that much.
And John, I'll just say this. I know there are listeners out there, and I'm sure there are listeners out there who have been wronged by a family member. You know, whether it's a wife, a cheating spouse, or a cheating husband, or a mother or father who have done something to their children, or vice versa. And maybe it was 10 minutes ago or 10 years ago. You've got to, and I think we all have to practice forgiveness and pray for that person, you know, as difficult as it is, because if you don't, you could self-destruct, and your soul hurts, and your heart hurts, and yeah.
I mean, if you want to know where the problems are, where the satanic influence is, it's that sense of hurt.
Yeah.
And injustice, and we're sitting here and we're thinking, I need to punish that person.
Yeah.
And the problem is, I mean, I look back at all the horrible things that I went through, and I went through some really bad stuff. Okay, really bad. I would not ask anybody to go through some of the things that I went through. Okay, but of course, everybody has their own story. But as I look back, I'm as big an idiot as the people who did those things to me. Seriously.
Yeah, I know. You know, I laugh because I can so relate to that. You know, and yeah, thank you. I sometimes sit and I know this is not healthy, but you've got to you actually have to recognize that you yourself, meaning me, you're an idiot. The first step of healing is understanding, okay, I'll stipulate I'm an idiot, all right? To the extent that, you know, I've done something wrong. So, because otherwise, in my view anyway, what you have is this ego that takes over. And ego, there's nothing good that comes from ego, let me tell you. That's what I believe. And mm-hmm. I believe 99% of what's going on, especially in the alternative media with you know, people trying to tear other people down, or even in small circles or wherever, it's ego. It's misguided self-importance. I mean, go ahead, John. I didn't mean to.
No, it's perfect. No, the thing is just to sort of relate some of my own experience. I was bullied, you know, when I was in grade school. I've got a big mouth. I've got this the biggest mouth you ever saw. In fact, as big as my feet are, that foot fits real well into this mouth. And I went through a really bad period, and I was asking a counselor for help, and we spent some time talking, and it's just like, and she turns to me one day and she says, "John, you were just a jerk." Talking about what I went through, says, "John, you were just a jerk." Those weren't her exact words, but I'm not going to repeat them. And I just sat there, and my mouth fell open. I felt so hurt, and then the truth dawned. I was an absolute jerk. So the thing is now, and again, I was asking for it, okay? I was asking for all the things I went through. They were terrible times, but I was asking for it, okay? The point is, we may have some fault. It may not be your fault or anything like that, but we still have to forgive. And even though that, you know, I know we're supposed to be talking about current events and things like that, but there is a connection to current events. There is a connection to the things that we're going through.
Think about
what is happening in Europe. Now, we talked about Halloween, you know, how Satan is feeding on the rage and the anger that we may feel, and as we sort of as he speaks to that rage and anger and tries to direct that rage and anger towards his own ends. Well, think about what's going on in Europe right now.
Hey, John, if I may, just because it's the day before here, the day of their Halloween, if I can just briefly, I mean, because there are a lot of Christians that really don't know, and others do, and if you do know, please bear with me. If I could just take two minutes out real quick here and just kind of go over the highlights of Halloween and understanding what's going on and how we've been brainwashed into celebrating a holiday called Samhain, or Samhain. It's, you know, that's how it's pronounced, but it's actually spelled differently. It's really a 3-day fire festival where sacrifices are given to fires for the sun god. Okay, this is a sun god worship, and it's a festival for the dead, much like Beltane is for the festival of the living, at least in the cult circles. And there are traditions grown from this pagan ritual. And again, yeah, people need to know this. Just very quickly, you know, to understand really why we do things. Why do we send our children out in costumes and masks? And why do we put jack-o'-lanterns on, you know, hollowed-out pumpkins with a candle in on our porch? Well, you know, where'd that come from? Do people ask these questions anymore? Well, if people knew the answers to this, I wonder how many people would actually engage in what this holiday is. And some say, well, it's just harmless, you know. Well, look, real quick here. Stonehenge, just think back there. And I'm going to go over very quickly here. That's where the Druids would really go to worship their stag god, if you will, on the occult holidays of the year. Now, there are many Stonehenges across the globe, but, you know, in the UK, it's pretty, that's when you think of anyway. But sacrifices are performed, even still today in Ascarististar at these sites through very barbaric rituals, fountain of blood rituals, and it's all about the blood. In fact, some of these, not just, you know, as much as I hate to describe this, but you got to know, one ritual in particular, the occultists will hang a person upside down, or hang a person with a rope and tie it around their neck. They'd slit their throat to create this arterial blood spurting, and not a pretty sight, believe me. And Druids would then gather on Samhain with their gourds and pumpkins, and they were called corpse candles, okay, which are now referred to as jack-o'-lanterns. And what they do is they fill them with human fat taken from the previous sacrifices given to gods, and then they'd also bring cauldrons and light them on fire, warming them up for the next sacrificial ceremony, which is something a little bit different. Actually, you, ladies and gentlemen, would know this as the harmless bobbing for apples. But having said that, the Druids would then go around, bang on the doors of the local nobles of the area, yell trick or treat to see if the Lord of the manor would come to provide a treat. And what do you think the treat was? Was it candy at that time? Was it the Mars bars, you know, wrapped up? No. No, a treat would be really one of the servants that, or even members of the household, given up for sacrifice that night. The reward for the treat would be one of the pumpkins filled with human fat. And they would light the fat and put it outside the door. So they would know, the occultists would know, hey, that house already gave. That house already gave one of the people from the house. And so they're protected from the demons summoned on Samhain. So,
yeah, that's like, you know, voodoo, invoking demons right to protect you from evil. And, you know, not to take this too far, but, you know, Saturnalia was something that you,
right,
I understood Christmas and its origins to an extent, but never the extent of Saturnalia and what that was based on and what they did there. It's kind of the same in a way, you know, with all the different, and this goes back to the traditions of men and, you know, the evil influence that is intertwined with the systems of religion, at least the establishment religion, and what they've allowed in conforming to these. But out of all the holidays, Halloween is obviously the most blatant evil holiday.
And
for Christians to completely disconnect that and be willing to take part in it after knowing the truth of the matter.
Well, remember the Jordanian pilot that was burned alive? I don't want to take too much time away from John here, but, I mean, think, Wicker Man, okay? Wicker Man also comes from and is related to Halloween. If men would, well, let me just go back up real quick here and just say this. Human sacrifices, those to be sacrificed, would be rounded up and then lined up. The druids would toss apples. Remember that cauldron I referenced, warming up the water? They'd drop the apples in this cauldron of water and give their potential sacrifices a chance to pull the apples out with their teeth. Now you see, when you're doing this in your kitchen, ladies and gentlemen, with your children, this is why. Okay, so the cauldrons were boiling hot, and many of the people lined up for sacrifice were burned beyond recognition, damaged their faces and such. But those who didn't get the apple on the first try, what happened? They were beheaded right then and there. While those who, if you avoided that challenge or somehow said, no, I'm not going to do it or whatever, try to run away, well, there's the Wicker Man. They'd be tossed in a wicker cage and placed inside of the wicker cage. And just like the film with Nicolas Cage, by the way, and the Wicker Man would be lit on fire as a sacrifice to the gods, and drawing us back yet again to the Nimrod and Semiramis connection. So the annual Burning Man celebration is also a reenactment of the ceremony. And I said all that, John, just to set the stage for the fact that people have really no clue. I mean, the trick part too, I'll just go leave it at this. The druids would paint usually in blood, a hexagram on your lawn, and that, of course, would be open season for the people at that manor or that house. And so, I mean, all of this together, this is what we're looking at, and this is really celebrated even today. And you can ask Russ Dizdar by the Satanists and the occultists, by pagans, and by others, and it's unfortunate, but
think about the biblical examples, Daniel, Job, and other people of the Bible who were put through things and tests of their faith. If they were in the situation we were in, what would they do? What would Jesus say? What would he, and what did he say on the matter? I believe it's very clear. If just one has to open the Bible and read it.
Right. So anyway, John, thanks for allowing me to go through that. And anyway, no, there you have it. Did I get it right?
Great.
I'm not. Okay.
I am not an expert in these things. In fact, I have to defer to Russ on this as well. People that have been called by God to go against, with the power of God, these things, have an education that you and I would never in our lives ever want. Such an education. So Russ has learned some things that we never want to know, frankly.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that there's a lot that he doesn't say. But what you have said is a lot of, that's basically pretty much all that I know. The only thing that I can add is the mistake that I believe that the Roman Catholic Church has made. They have tried to reclaim Halloween by turning it into something that they believe to be good, the worship of the saints and, some sort of praise towards God and things like that. But you can't really do that. It's almost like their attempt to reclaim Halloween or Samhain has really only kept the remembrance of Halloween alive. I don't know that we would know anything about Halloween or Samhain if it wasn't for the Roman Catholic Church attempting to purify it.
Hmm.
So, that's sort of my own take on this. I think that there was a good intention, but it was misdirected. Others may have a harsher view of these things, but I think that we should never have any... don't make any deals with the devil, I guess you might say. And I'm not saying that that's what they were doing, but there is an element of this. Satan loves the acknowledgement, even though he's trying to get us to accept him. The fact that we acknowledge these things, that's good just for him. So, in fact, actually, I don't believe that this necessarily applies to us, but when God was speaking to the children of Israel in the desert, he said to them, don't even mention the names of these gods. Don't even talk about it. Now, we are different because I believe that we have the indwelling Holy Spirit. I believe that we have the power and the ability to talk about some of these things, and I don't believe that it is a sin to do what we are doing now, is to warn others of what these things are. But I think that there is this principle in the sense of the acknowledgement and the, verification. The words sort of fail me as to how to even talk about this. We are not to give acknowledgement to Satan in the sense of giving him, permission to exist in our lives, to have presence or whatever such things. I mean, we are to pray for the good. We are to seek blessing. We are to leave vengeance towards God, for God. God will be the one who will avenge the good. We are to leave these things towards God, and we are to seek the good. Now, sometimes we have to defend the good from that which is evil, and Russ Dizdar does a fantastic job of that. And I his website is shatterthedarkness.com, I think.
.net.
Yeah, shatterthedarkness.net.
Okay, shatterthedarkness.net. Wonderful. Yes, okay, I see it now. And also his book is theblackawakening.com. So, And Sheila's... Go ahead.
Wow. No, it's all of this. I guess if we take a step back, John, all of this connects. What you have written connects with what Russ teaches, which connects with what we talk about, and Sheila Zielinski talks about, and Pastor Langford talks about, and so many others. And all of this, provides the listeners and readers, when you come on your article, your reports, and your audio, all of this really provides the entirety, I believe, of the state of affairs of man in the larger sense. So I kind of drifted there with my thoughts, I guess, but yeah, you just make a good point in this. Go ahead. Okay.
Well, it's completely appropriate because there is a connection to the events that we're struggling with today in the wider area of geopolitics. And, well, look at what's going on in Europe. Who is it that is invading Europe today? 75% of those migrants, and no, they are not refugees. Yes, there are some that are refugees. But 75% of those migrants are young men of military age.
Yep.
And you can see that many of them are of military training. And as one man challenged an aid worker at a refugee camp, I think this one was actually in Jordan, but he was asking for blankets, and he turns to the woman and said, who was reluctant to give him everything he asked for, and he says, I've already killed 73 people. Today, I may make it 74. And these are vicious, vicious people that are flooding into Europe. Not all of them. Some of them are bad Muslims, which is good for us. For us, we want to see bad Muslims. Good Muslims are taught that it's okay to rape your daughters, that it's okay to steal and to kill and to destroy. And in fact, as you were describing that poor Jordanian pilot that was burned alive and some of the other things that you were talking about, Islam teaches all the things that we're talking about in terms of Halloween. Now, not in terms of the bobbing for apples and the Wicker Man necessarily, but a lot of those torturous and horrible things that are going on, and some of the things that we can't even speak of because they are too vile, all of those things are taught in the Quran and in the Hadith. So, as we deal and we wrestle with these issues, we're wrestling with all the same kinds of things that are at the heart of Islam. Islam teaches rage and anger and wrath. It is a religion of vengeance. It is a religion of death and destruction. It is not a religion of peace. In fact, the only peace that really Islam teaches is the peace of death. Once is, you know, should Islam take over the world, and there are some people that indicate that maybe the Antichrist will be a Muslim Antichrist. I'm not quite so sanguine over that. But the thing is that should the world be taken over by Islam, Islam will turn upon itself. Muslims destroy other Muslims. In fact, one of the things that people don't quite realize is that in 1972, Israel was involved in stopping the Syrians from invading Jordan. Jordan was going through a civil war started by Yasser Arafat and the Palestinians. They rose up attempting to overthrow King Hussein in Jordan in 1972. And in fact, if you ever hear of Black September, that's the moment. It was September 1972. Syria mobilized and was planning on invading Jordan to support the Palestinians. Israel mobilized and basically threatened Syria that if you invade Jordan, we will invade you. And so Israel stopped the Syrian invasion of Jordan. One Islamic country invading another Islamic country. Islam will destroy itself should it ever take over. In fact, actually, you might say that probably one of the biggest arguments against a Muslim Antichrist is the fact that Islam will self-destruct, which if it ever completely took over. So as we talk about these issues of Satanism, well, look at what's going on in among the Muslims. Look at what the Muslims are bringing into Europe, where the rape capital of the world is now Stockholm, Sweden.
I saw that.
Exactly.
Wait a minute. Say that again,
Stockholm,
John?
Sweden.
Stockholm, Sweden.
Is the rape Stockholm, capital of the world.
That's the rape, okay.
The rape capital of the world.
Wow.
All of the rapes in Stockholm, Sweden, that are between people that do not know each other intimately, not family members, not friends, all of the rapes in Stockholm, Sweden, are from Muslim men raping Swedish women.
And it's gotten to the point where they're calling for basically Second Amendment type rights to come back to Europe and Austria and different parts where you can buy long guns. They're all sold out right now. And people are arming themselves with whatever they can right now. And they're calling for guns to be brought back in different parts of Europe directly due to the immigration influx that we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, actually, this is all a part of this new category that I now include in my research and in my writing called Matthew 24/7. In fact, actually, you might even say Matthew 24/7, but Matthew chapter 24, verse 7, Jesus spoke of nation rising against nation. And we see this nation of Islam, even though this isn't the nation of Islam, but this ethnic group, this Muslim ethnic group, this diverse Muslim ethnic group that is flooding into Europe, that is causing this sort of visceral reaction by the Germans and by the Austrians and by these others, that this response, but it's a little slow in coming. So you've got the Muslims that are rushing in, these other nations that are receiving this wave, this tidal wave of Islam, are starting to realize, wait a second, we've got a problem. People are trying to arm themselves. People are trying to get together in groups and oppose. We're seeing refugee centers being burned down. We're starting to see opposition. I mean, these towns are being overrun. A town of 100 will receive 1,000 refugees. So, it's going to be a lot of violence. And now that we have winter coming on, I mean, November in Germany is cold, especially in the northern parts.
Yep.
And these refugees are going to start freezing to death. And remember, these people are coming from countries that do not understand our civilization, don't care about our civilization, don't care about the peace and the ways that we have of dealing with each other. Their response to these things is violence. Sitting in Israel, every few years, Jordan would have to go through food riots where towns would rise up and Jordan would have to surround the towns and declare martial law and try to suppress the violence.
And John, if I can...
go ahead.
You know, and with this, you know, this violent extremism we see coming from the Muslims, we at least know what to expect from them. And then yet we have a government who is supposed to be a representative of the people of this country who is labeling Christians as violent extremists while embracing the Muslim influx and, you know, bending over backwards to appease them and to try to make this place more like the way where they came from.
He's balkanizing the country.
I mean, it's crazy. It's one thing. I mean, at least we know where they stand and what to expect. But the way our leaders have, you know, changed their tune, and you know, we see the president's speeches. We're not a Christian nation anymore. You know, Islam is a religion of peace, and on and on and on. And letting the illegal immigrants coming in here, giving them citizenship, giving them health insurance, giving them benefits that, you know, most citizens aren't entitled to. I mean, I've never seen this kind of laying out the red carpet for any other group for any reason.
Yeah.
Oh, it's well, I mean, let's connect with one of the individuals we talked about, Jeremiah. Here he is. He has spent years telling them about what is coming. They have refused to see it. What he promised did come, yet they still refuse to listen. In fact, they threw him in jail because he was, quote-unquote, weakening the people by telling them about what they have to do with the Babylonian army. And then when Judah is destroyed, there's only just a tiny remnant left. Jeremiah, they're ready to go flee into Egypt. And it's actually really disappointing to see the one name that is connected to mine. My name is John, of course, J-O-H-N. And Yochanan is the Hebrew origin of that name. And the, you might say, the chief of general staff was Yochanan. I think it was Yochanan ben Zakkai, but I think it was, his name was Yochanan. And so Yochanan goes to Jeremiah, and as they're ready to move into Egypt, and he says, tell you what, ask God what we should do. Ask God what we should do, and we'll do it. Whatever God wants us to do, we will do it. So Jeremiah waits, and it's like about 9-10 days, I don't remember exactly, and God tells them what they have to do, and Jeremiah says, okay, do not go to Egypt.
Hold that thought, John. We're at
go
the
ahead.
Break.
Wow.
We're at the top of the hour break. When we come back, we'll hear the rest of that story. Jeremiah listening to the Lord for instruction. And you're listening to the Hagman to Hagman Report here on Friday, October 30th, 2015 on Global Star Radio Network. Our guest is John Little. His website is OmegaShock.com. OmegaShock.com. Bookmark that. We'll be right back for our third and final hour after this. Stay with us.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.